Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com, accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast. I want to start out by reminding you that wealthformula.com has a bunch of different resources for you to access at your leisure, including a free copy of my book, Seven Secrets of Eternal Wealth, which you can simply download. You can also text me for that at 44222 and type in Wealth Formula. One word again, that's 44222, Wealth Formula. There's also an opportunity to get a free book from George Newberry, Burn Zones, about his days as a freewheeling, high-rolling, multifamily titan and his fall from grace there. And so it's a really good read as well. So check that out on wealthformula.com as well. Finally, I also want to point out that there is a course, Your Roadmap to Real Wealth, which comes with a private community or a Facebook community and additional content as well as bi-weekly mastermind phone calls for this, what we call the Wealth Formula Network. If you're interested in that, I highly encourage you to check it out. Go to wealthformularoadmap.com and hopefully it'll be something that you're interested in. Now, as far as this week, I thought we'd do something a little bit different. When I think about these days, it's kind of crazy to me how the politics really resemble a television reality show. I mean, it's crazy, right? Take a step back for a moment, regardless of your political preferences. This is not talking about anything political. You have to admit that the last 2 years have been unprecedented. I mean, remember when having an affair was enough to end a political career? I remember this guy back in the 80s who was it Michael Dukakis? No. Yeah, it was Gary Hart. Gary Hart, that's right. He had some kind of pictures of him taken with a woman that was not his wife on a boat, and the next thing you know, he had to withdraw from the presidential race. Well, now we have a president who's literally paying off adult film stars and Playboy bunnies. And the times have changed, right? Either that or he's just Teflon Don. I don't know. But anyway, last week we had midterm elections and the drama that surrounded all that. And now the House of Representatives is in the hands of the Democrats. So almost certainly Donald Trump is going to see a flurry of investigation activity and potentially subpoenas in 2019. Who knows, you may end up seeing some tax returns. Anyway, the one thing's for sure, it's a great way to end season two of the presidency because no one is going to tune out now. I mean, seriously, this is the best reality TV show in town. Now, one of the things I'm most curious about next season is what happens with this whole Mueller probe into the Russian interference and questions of collusion, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it seems like both Democrats and Republicans in Congress seem to be trying to protect the sanctity of that investigation. And, you know, I certainly hope they do. While it does seem like the investigation is taking quite a long time, and I totally agree with that, it seems like, man, let's get this thing done with. I think it's also in the best interest of the country for these findings to be released to the American people, right? I think that's critically important, especially after this long investigation. And if the president is innocent, like he says he is, then he should have nothing to worry about. And this thing is actually going to probably, if that's the case and there's no collusion, there's no issues, then in fact, this is going to be a huge political win for him and he should be looking forward to that. In the meantime, I think it's not in his best interest to continue attacking the FBI and the CIA. I mean, I think it's important to remember that these people, the FBI and the CIA, the intelligence community, are public servants. They all are people who have volunteered effectively to keep us safe and being the front line in a different kind of war, right? Cyber war, you know, all these other things that are going on. In my view, attacking the intelligence community is sort of like attacking the military. And of course, no one is going to stand for that, right? I mean, you're not going to literally say something terrible about your own army or navy or air force or whatever. Well, why would you say anything horrible about our intelligence community? I mean, these are people that are serving our country, and it's important to recognize that and not to demonize them. I think that that's un-American to do. Now, speaking of our intelligence community, I've got a very interesting show for you to listen to today as we head into this Thanksgiving week. It's an interview with Valerie Plame. Now, does that name ring a bell to you? Well, if you were around during the Bush administration, remember that, it probably does. She was the spy who got outed by the Bush administration. Yep, that's her. Anyway, this will be a really fun show to listen to for the holiday week, so make sure you tune in when we come back.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com. Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast is Valerie Plame. The name may sound familiar. She's a former covert CIA operations officer who spent her career protecting America's national security by preventing the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. And following the 9/11 attacks of 2001 and during the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, Valerie was involved in CIA programs intended to upgrade U.S. intelligence on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs. Her life and career was upended when her secret identity was intentionally exposed by the members of the Bush-Cheney administration. She has since then done a number of other things, though. She's written several best-selling books and speaks internationally on issues such as cybersecurity, national security, nuclear proliferation, women in intelligence, and the NSA revelations. Valerie, thanks for being on Wealth Formula Podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
So I got to start out basic because, you know, you're the first spy that we've ever had on the show. I have to start asking, how does one, I mean, we're going to get into more interesting topics for you, but I'm just curious, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, how do you become a spy in the first place? How do you become a covert? Like, how do you just, you know, obviously you were probably not thinking I'm going to be a spy when I grow up or something like that.
No, I wasn't at all. I had no idea that that was actually a career option. But I will say I come from a family of public service. My dad was a career Air Force officer, and he served in the South Pacific in World War II. My brother was a Marine. He was wounded in Vietnam. My mother was a public school teacher. So the notion of public service was something that I was exposed to. And when I was given this opportunity to join the CIA, I jumped at it. It seemed like it was really interesting. And I thought it was great that the government was going to pay me to live and work abroad. And that's how that started.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Can you describe your work around the time of 9/11 as the U.S. was gearing up for the Iraq invasion?
I developed an expertise in nuclear counterproliferation. Essentially, what that means is making sure that bad guys do not get a nuclear weapon. And bad guys could be a rogue nation state, terrorists, black marketeers. So in the period after 9/11, in the run-up to the war with Iraq, I was the head of operations trying to figure out what the heck was going on in Iraq. We had very little intelligence because, one, our embassy had closed after the first Gulf War in 1991. And you probably recall that in 1998, Saddam Hussein kicked out the UN weapons inspectors. So when the Bush administration, as we know, pivoted from trying to defeat the Taliban in Afghanistan, and it became clear that their focus was more and more on Iraq, the question was, well, what do we know? And so I was working with my former colleagues and trying to figure out who were the scientists, what was the state of their R&D, how were they paying for this, you know, what was going on.
Now, was that done in conjunction with the Bush administration, or was there sort of the FBI or the CIA in this case, you know, doing what they thought that needed to be done? Or was it a coordinated effort at this point with the Bush-Cheney administration, or how does that work?
I think the heart of your question is, why do we go to war with Iraq? Yeah. Is that
what
you're getting?
No, I guess because what happened ultimately here was there was, the Bush-Cheney administration came out and said there was these weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And as it turned out, that was not the case. But in the meantime, you guys were actually out there trying to find weapons of mass destruction, right? So,
well, here's what happens. You know, the directive comes from the president.
Right.
And clearly, really, in the weeks following 9/11, already the very top advisors, from former Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld to Dick Cheney to other senior officials in the Bush White House, had pivoted to Iraq. Now, that's a whole other conversation of why that happened and who was, it was a neoconservative view of how to redraw the map of the Middle East. And Iraq had always been a central part of that. So they really began to ask questions. And the CIA's job is to try to answer those questions as best they can using well-sourced intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah. So your story ultimately became international news when your identity as a covert agent was leaked. Can you talk a little bit about the events that led up to that?
So I guess I should start in February 2002. I'll be very brief about it. And I'll just run through it because it's been a while.
Yeah.
But I was working at CIA headquarters, and one of my colleagues, a junior officer, came to me, and she was quite concerned because the office of the vice president had called her to ask her about these reports of 500 tons of yellowcake uranium being transported, bought from Niger to Iraq. Now, if that was true, that would be really important because it would, in fact, indicate that Saddam Hussein was reconstituting his country's nuclear program.
Right.
So, first of all, when she was telling me this, I have to say I was quite sort of taken aback that the office of the vice president was calling a junior officer in the CIA headquarters. That's typically not how it's done. But we were talking about it, and someone came by and heard it and said, well, why don't we ask your husband, Joe Wilson, to go investigate these reports? Now, the reason he suggested Joe Wilson was because he had deep experience at both ends of this. He had served as a Foreign Service officer, a diplomat in Niger, and he had served as, in part, the charge d'affaires at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad during the first Gulf War. So Joe knew all the characters. He knew the landscape. And the CIA always wants to try to answer any questions that the White House might have. So Joe was dispatched, not by me, but by my superiors, to go to Niger and check out these reports. And when he came back, he reported that there's no way this happened. This is totally bogus. This is, you know, and here's why. One, two, three. So that was done and filed and sent away. And then fast forward to January 2003, and Bush talks in his State of the Union address about, through the British, we have learned that Saddam Hussein has sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
Right.
So it wasn't clear that that was Niger. But Joe very discreetly began to investigate, well, what did the president mean? Why, how did that get into the State of the Union address? I know, you know, I don't, there's no way that those reports were accurate. So he was told, and at this point he had resigned from the, retired from the State Department. He was a consultant. But he was talking to his former colleagues in the State Department, talking to staffers on the Hill, and he was told, oh yeah, it was Niger, but if you want to do anything about it, you're going to have to do it yourself. So of course we went to war in March 2003, and these stories start bubbling up. One, of course, we're not finding any WMD, and stories start bubbling up without naming him, but that talk about maybe, you know, not all the intelligence was as presented. And after much consideration in July of 2003, he decided to write an op-ed for the New York Times entitled What I Did Not Find in Africa. And in it, he just went after the central rationale that the Bush administration gave for our war, which was an imminent nuclear threat. And Joe wrote that he felt that the intelligence had been cherry-picked. That landed with quite a splash, because it was a particular moment in time, I would say. The Bush White House was feeling rather vulnerable because they've sold the war to the American people on grounds that are proving not to be so. And then this op-ed comes out by a, you know, pretty establishment kind of guy.
Yeah.
And a week later, there was a column by conservative writer, columnist, Robert Novak, that outed me as working for the CIA, and that I had had something to do with sending Joe on this, quote, boondoggle. So that's, then everything just sort of blew up from that.
So that presumably that was, you know, that was tit for tat kind of, or...
It was retaliation. Oh, no question.
Yeah. So now when you look at what happened, because obviously, you know, that was... I mean, that was big news. I remember that. Of course, never thought I would be talking to you about it. But 15 years later, how do you view that? What happened to you? I mean, what's your you've had time to think about this. How do you put this into context? And you know, what are your conclusions that you come away from it?
Well, look, for me personally, I was really sad to lose my career.
Sure.
I loved what I did. I was proud to serve my country. I thought what I was doing every once in a while was actually relevant. And so that ended rather abruptly. But on a much broader scale, I think Americans have yet to reckon with the Iraq War 15 years on. I think it was a mistake that we will regret for generations to come. Obama came in and famously he wanted to look forward, not behind, you know, not backward. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, to this day, we still have not had a reckoning.
Yeah. So now, you know, fast forward all these years, we live in some pretty unique times where there's, you know, really where there's this overt conflict between the president and national security agencies as a whole. Was this sort of always there at a lower level and that we just didn't see this clearly, or is this completely, you know, is this a completely new thing?
Look, where we are today in our national politics with the president that we have is completely unprecedented, without question. But I would agree with those who say that, in fact, Donald Trump is a symptom, not the cause of where we find ourselves. I think what happened was those that see themselves as progressive or more on the left side of the spectrum patted themselves on the back with the election of Obama and thought, oh, we're doing great. You know, we've elected a man of color to the White House.
The
end of racism in America and everything else. Well, as it turns out, the institutions that rely so heavily upon for a democratic society have been deeply eroded. And now we have a president who, besides, frankly, his ignorance of national security and other issues, because, of course, he's never run for office before. I think it's fair to say that he knows very little about it. But he, unfortunately, even before he was sworn in, even as campaigning, he really made enemies of those in the intelligence service and throughout the intelligence community because of some of his comments and how he phrased things. And I believe he likened the CIA to Nazis, you know, never a winning hand. That I think most Americans, no matter who you vote for, you hope the day after the election, you want your country to do well. You want that president to do well because we're all in this boat together. But unfortunately, that hasn't proven to be the case. Although by many counts, this is your thing, the economy is doing well. I dare say that it's rather uneven. And the other things that glue us together as a democracy, as a society, of course, what we're seeing is deep division, which is distressing.
Yeah. So, you know, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about with your perspective is, you know, one of the things we hear a lot about these days, in part from the Trump administration and people, because of this conflict between the president and national security agencies, is this talk of a quote unquote deep state. And some think that this deep state has its own agenda that's, you know, independent of elected government. Is that fake news, or is there something that's really to that? I mean, is there, you know, sort of that deep-rooted career bureaucracy group that kind of, hey, this is what we believe in, this is what we're going to do regardless of the government? Is that?
Well, I hope you're not going down the rabbit hole of QAnon, because that's a whole other.
I'm not going down that.
Okay,
that's
I'm
but
happy to hear that.
But more than anything, if anything, it addresses that, because I think that QAnon thing just takes it to another level. And I think the reason for bringing this up is more just because it's like this. It's a rallying cry of the Trump administration, sort of right now. You know that there's this deep state is after me kind of thing. And I'm just kind of wondering what is a deep state? Is there a deep state?
He plays that card well. And that whole term deep state actually comes from Turkish politics, and look where they are now.
Right.
Of course, they're really good people throughout the government that they're trying to do their job. They love their country. They might be at odds with whomever is in the top job. And that's always the case of, you know, because we go on both sides, Democratic and Republican presidents. The trick is, of course, how to navigate those waters. How do you continue to make sure that good policy is done? What happens? What do you do if it's at odds with presidential policy and so forth? And there have always have been bureaucrats, officials, if you will, who have resigned on principle because they simply could not support whatever, you know, was being, they felt rammed down their throats. This has been taken to a whole nother level. Of course, there was the so-called anonymous op-ed in the New York Times of last week that fanned those flames what that served to do was to make Trump even more paranoid. And they're out to get me. And he can point to that and go, see, I would find it very hard to believe that it's anything very well organized. First of all, I've worked for the government for many years. You know, it's really hard to keep a secret, much less organize on that sort of scale.
Right. And, you know, when you look at it, certainly even within the agencies, and I think you mentioned something about this in your book, where it used to be the case that people kind of kept their politics to themselves. And but increasingly, even within the security agencies these days, that it's not quite the case. And how is that impacting the work that needs to be done?
I absolutely believe it has changed. And I would actually pinpoint the election of 2000, Bush v. Gore and all of that as a turning point. It felt like after that, in where it used to be, you know, you did not, in polite company or your dinner table, you did not talk about sex, politics, or religion. And all of a sudden, I feel that after that moment, and then 9/11 broke us open even more so. Initially, we were united, but quickly fractures appeared because of the Bush administration's policies. So everyone is much more highly politicized, and we find ourselves in a highly polarized country. So how does that affect the work that has to be done? Intelligence professionals are just that, professionals. They really try hard just to do their job, deliver the facts. But they're swimming in this water like all the other fish, and you have to be affected by that. So when you have the president at the very top who is denigrating the work you were doing, whether it's the FBI, whether it's the CIA, I mean, apparently Trump's comments today against Attorney General Jeff Sessions were yet another round of a punching bag. I don't understand how that is supposed to be motivating or leadership. I don't understand that.
So is there anything, I mean, short of, you know, a reset, presumably within the next administration, whatever that is there anything we can do about the rancor now? Or is this, I mean,
Look, you know, democracy, messy as it is the best thing we've got. So what does that rely upon? It relies upon educated voters. And how important, it just absolutely makes me want to scream or cry or both when I see particularly young people going, I'm not, you know, I don't know where to vote. My vote doesn't matter. Get with it. I believe, at least maybe this has changed, but one of the most vastly underrepresented voting groups are young women aged like 18 to 45. And no matter where you are on women's reproductive rights, you really should understand how your vote or your lack of a vote could very deeply and personally affect your life. That's just one example.
Right.
So besides, educate yourself, take in different points of view, and get to work. You know, look, we are all responsible for keeping our democracy safe and healthy. And I don't think it's either right now.
So you tell your story in your memoir, and it's called Fair Game, which we will definitely link to in the show notes for people who are interested. Very interesting read. But you've also done quite a bit of other writing and speaking. Where can we learn more about, you know, what you're up to and you know, all the rest of the work you're doing?
Well, I do have a website, ValeriePlainWilson.com, which has It's a landing spot for the different things that I care about. One thing I'm working on right now, which is really fun, I'm putting together what I'm calling a spy conference, if you will. It'll be here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I live. And I've invited about half a dozen of my former colleagues, former ops officers, and these guys are legendary. And they're going to come, and for a weekend, we're going to talk about things like cybersecurity, Russian interference, nuclear proliferation in where we are today. And it's not just going to be war stories, because, you know, that's not useful. I want these amazing, and these are really decorated officers, to talk about their area of expertise, their issue, but then connect the dots to today and why it's relevant. So if any of your listeners might be interested in that, they should go to spyseminars.com.
Spyseminars.com. And we'll also put that show link to that So this has been really fun, Valerie. Thanks so much for being a Wealth Formula podcast and really sort of shedding light on, you know, this inside world that, you know, very few of us know anything about.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. Now, I know that Valerie didn't seem to be fond of the president, President Trump, but, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinions, right? The bigger issue that I want to remind you is that she served our country and she's a patriot. So whether you agree with her views or not, she deserves our respect. She is a former spy. She put her life out on the line for us. And so we need to respect that. Now, I want to take a moment at this point to thank you, because it is Thanksgiving. And, you know, Wealth Formula Podcast has been such a huge, smashing success that, and it couldn't have happened without you, of course, because otherwise I'd just be talking to myself like I used to. And I want to thank you for being such loyal listeners, for making the show, you know, a top investing podcast, and for giving me the opportunity to, you know, interview all these interesting people, because I have the gravitas from what the show has become. To do that. And so anyway, thank you. I appreciate that. All I can say is happy Thanksgiving. That's it for me this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. This is Buck Joffrey signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.